sing if you're ready to care. Oh, let's talk power, let's talk speed. Hosted by the one and only We Too Deep. Turn it up loud, feel the power in your seat. This is Slapping Me, yeah, Slapping Me.
What is up, everybody? It is your boy, We Too Deep. Apparently, by the way, not only am I the one and only We Too Deep, I am head of the E-Drone Academy, We Too Deep. Apparently, we'll talk a little bit more about that in our opening thoughts. But I want to welcome y'all to the Slapping Me Wrestling Podcast. If you're a day one-er, and you're still here, put them ones up in the comment section. We love all of my day ones that are still here. Appreciate all of y'all. If you're brand new here, welcome. It's a train wreck, but it's fun every single week. Episodes on Tuesday, episodes on Friday, where we talk about the wonderful world of pro wrestling. If you guys... well, do me a favor, brand new, or if you've been here forever, like, share, subscribe, leave us a comment, get us in the algorithms. That way, more people can experience how great this podcast is. I say this not in a bragging way, because like there's no numbers to prove this, right? But I truly believe from a content standpoint, from the views and the words coming out of my mouth, that I do one of, if not the best, wrestling podcasts from people who aren't, like, in the business, right? So, obviously, you got your Cornettes and your Van Fleets and Undertaker and all of the WWE stuff that they're creating, right? It's crazy. You know, I got an opinion on this. They canceled their podcast department, like, 2 years ago just to have Fanatics basically pay for it now. And so now they're bringing podcasts back with WWE. Can we get Corey Graves' podcast back? I don't know if he does it or not, but they don't promote it. So if you're new here, I'm We Too Deep. I'm the host. I'm the man with the crazy, but logical opinions here in the IWC internet wrestling community. This is a place where all people are allowed to express opinions and facilitate conversation. And we facilitate that conversation in the Real Wrestling Community Discord, which is run by me, as well as the boys over at the Junkyard or Beyond the Junkyard podcast, Junkyard James and Cody, James had to do the episode yesterday solo. If you go check that out, we're going to be responding, or some of the topics will be in response to what he said. So to get the context, you will need a little bit of that. I'm not going to completely like reference what he says, but like all the time, so you won't necessarily need to listen to the whole thing, but there are a couple topics that are added last minute in response to what he said, right? With that being said, the last two little housekeeping announcements, go grab your merch at slappingmewrestling.com if you guys want to support. That's probably the best. The shipping, please don't yell at me if you order and you don't get your stuff in an orderly time. Yell at Teespring, which is the website we sort of go through, and as soon as I get my actual shirts that I ordered, probably we're going to change that, but for now, slappingmewrestling.com. And then finally, go click the link in the description for the WWE shop. Our link, you click the link, you shop like normal. Just got an email right before I clicked record. They're doing 25% off all orders, and then any order over 30% gets 30, or excuse me, let me read this properly. Any order over $49 gets 30% off. Any order, no matter the minimum price, will get at least 25% off. But you have to use the code PINFALL. That's PINFALL. I'm not sure how the email doesn't say how long that lasts for. So I'm assuming it's just this weekend. So go and get you some merch. This is the time to do it. 30% off orders, $49 or more. 25% off all orders, with no minimum purchase amount. With that being said, let's get into the actual wrestling content with our opening thoughts. And we're going to start with the easiest thing to talk about. B-Master put in, B-Master put in and asked a question to me and James in sort of like an open form format of like, I want to see who's the best booker. Can you book book a card for me? And right, James, do AEW, We Too Deep, do WWE, right? Name the event, let's pick, right? So I added, let's name the event. Where is it going to be located? What city, what arena? And then what's the card, right? And so being a Charlotte Charlotte raised a human being here in the great state of North Carolina, we haven't had a major pay-per-view since like 2019 in Charlotte. And that was Clash of the Champions. I was there on the floor somewhere. It was one of the worst seats I've ever had in a wrestling show. Floor seats, if you're not in like the front three rows, are absolutely not worth the money. At all. You can't see nothing. Anyway. And so we're doing live from the Spectrum Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're going to have Clash in the Carolinas, right? South Carolina is going to get looped into this thing because they're the ugly step cousin beneath us that needs our help with everything. Anyway. And so I'm not booking this like Triple H would, where he would do like five matches. No, we're having an actual super show event. I think there's 14 matches on this card. We will start at the bottom of the card, what I call. So we have four, what I call, spectacle matches. And then the rest of the matches on the card will be every single championship on the card, right? Because I do believe that you should have as many championships be defended on pay-per-views as possible. And so we'll start with what I call the spectacle matches. Three of the four are just simply battle of the brands, right? A great way to get like a representative from Raw, SmackDown, and you can get NXT on this card. And so the men's battle of the brand match will be Carmelo Hayes versus Chad Gable versus Javon Evans. Now, Javon Evans is the hometown kid. He's from Greensboro, North Carolina. So he's the North Carolina reference in this match. So we got three of them. We're going to have a men's, a women's, and a tag team, right? There's three brands, three matches. So each brand gets a win, right? So the question in booking this is who wins and when, right? So I'm going to have Javon Evans get NXT's win in the Battle of the Brands men's match. I think that's the best option here, right? So then we have the Battle of the Brands women's match, right? Stephanie Vaquer representing Raw, Roxanne Perez. Ah, shit. I just realized she's on Raw as well. Shit. All right. Here's what we're going to do. Triple, again, this brand, you could do some brand stuff here, right? Where you could swap shit out. We're going to trade, in my booking, we would trade Julia for Roxanne. They would swap brands, right? So Stephanie Vaquer representing Raw, Roxanne Perez representing SmackDown, Sol Ruka representing NXT. And so NXT already got their win with Javon Evans. I'm going to give Raw the victory here with Stephanie Vaquer. Stephanie Vaquer will win the Battle of the Brands women's match. And then we have Battle of the Brands tag team. And this is the core definition of this is how you know We Too Deep booked this match, because this is big meaty men slapping meat all over the place. Six big meaty men. What does Booker T say? No bread, no water, just meat. We got the team of Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed versus Solo Sikoa and JC Mateo versus the NXT Tag Team Champions Hank and Tank. And Solo and JC Mateo get SmackDown's win with this one. So that's how I would book that. The main attraction of what we call the attraction matches, or the something like that, is what I'm going to title the Battle of the Glamazons, right? Now, a Glamazon, for those who don't know, are larger-than-life women, typically in actual physical size. So we have Charlotte versus Rhea versus Jade versus Bianca versus Lash versus Jordan Grace. And this is a crazy match. You don't necessarily need... Here's the fun thing with this being a sort of showcase show, you know, not it doesn't necessarily need to be a PLE type event. I don't necessarily think you need story to go in the one of these showcase matches like this, right? And I don't think story, right? This entire match should be booked as who's the best of the big girls, right? Now, you can add in a Raquel Rodriguez. You can add in a Raquel Rodriguez in this match if you wanted to. But I like these six. I think this can set up future feuds, future alliances. I can already see like a situation where like Jade, Bianca, and Lash team up to take out Jordan, Rhea, and Charlotte, because you know that's how Triple H would book this thing. But if I'm booking this, you need like a legitimate badass to win this, and so part of me feels like this one's hard. This one is a legitimately hard match to book, because they're all bigger names outside of Lash and Jordan, which, right? I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be biased. Bianca Belair wins this. That's how I would book it. So there's our four sort of showcase spectacle matches. Now we get into the actual championship matches, right? So let's start with the tag team. We'll start with the World Tag Team Champions. That is the New Day, right? And they're going to rehash their alliance or rivalry, more so is the right word. They're going to rehash their rivalry, Battle of the Greatest Two Tag Teams of All Time, the New Day versus the Usos for the World Tag Team Championships. And that would be a banger match, a brand new sort of version. You know, everyone's like, oh, we've seen this before, but we've never seen it with heel New Day. Every time we've seen it, the Usos tend to have been the heels, right? Uso Penitentiary Usos, right? Now the roles are swapped. We get evil New Day versus babyface Usos. This is a new version of this match. And then the tag team championship, the Street Profits coming in as champion, taking on Fraxium. So let's go and predict the both of them. I have the Uso. I'll have the Usos be champions, and I also would have Fraction. We'll have two brand new tag team champions. Now, ultimately, in my point of view, what I would like to do is merge these titles together. So maybe you can lead to like a Uso Fraction feud to unify the tag team championships or something like that. Maybe we can remove it and just do like a fatal four-way winner takes all, unify the titles type thing as well. But for now, we'll just do two separate matches, right? We'll move to the women's the division, and we'll start with the mid-card with the Women's United States Championship match. Probably the worst booked match on the card, but the idea of the mid-card should be to elevate superstars to new levels. And so Zelina Vega, and we need a star that needs elevating, and that to me would be B-Fab. So Zelina Vega versus B-Fab may not be the greatest on paper match, and the result's going to leave someone like Wavy D, you know, a little bit wondering why I do things like this. But B-Fab's winning because the whole point of it is to elevate B-Fab to be in the main event picture, because I see that potential in B-Fab. I've been saying this. I see the potential. WWE sees the potential in B-Fab. That is why she's still on TV. And so B-Fab wins the United States Championship in the women's division. Women's Intercontinental Championship. This is, again, real sort of lazy booking. Becky Lynch versus Bayley. Again, when I fantasy book, I use current stories and sort of, right? So this just makes sense. You know, Becky versus Bayley. Maybe you could throw in Lyra. In fact, I am going to do that. We'll make a last minute adjustment to the card, and we'll make it a triple threat. Well, we'll add in Lyra Valkyria to the match, especially with the, with Bayley sort of like getting in the face of Lyra on Raw on Monday. I could see this being a triple threat if we ran the match like that, right? And then we run the big event, the big championships in the women's division. The women's championship match, Tiffany Stratton coming in as champion. I would just like this match, again, because there's no story really coming into it, just having like who's the best Barbie, right? Who's the best version of Barbie? Tiffany Stratton, Chelsea Green, and I don't know why I put the name wrong here, but Blake Monroe. I don't know why I want to call her Brooke, but Blake Monroe, Tiffany Stratton, Chelsea Green, and Blake Monroe. Tiffany keeps the title. I'm gonna be biased. I forgot to pick for the IC, women's IC. I'm gonna be biased, and Lyra wins the title again, leading to bigger feuds between Becky and Bayley as like a blood feud. And then Lyra can regain her title run she should have never lost. And then the last women's title, the Women's World Championship, would be just the greatest battle, a battle we need to have, and that is the best of Japan, basically. And this is why I would move Julia to Raw in replace of Roxanne Perez, part of the trade. For the Women's World Championship, you have Io Sky versus Asuka versus Kairi Sane versus Julia, and I would have Julia win this match. I would have Julia win this match without a single doubt. Julia will become Women's World Champion. That, I'll be honest with you, that match right there might, if I'm booking this, might be my main event, right? Just because I know how good that match could be if given time, right? So let's move to the men's titles. The Men's United States Championship, I'm going to have this as a no-holds-barred fatal four-way between champion Jacob Fatu, Damian Priest, Cody Rhodes, and Drew McIntyre. These are four top-level guys with no place on the card to really be placed other than the mid-card. And this is a difficult match to really book, but Jacob Fatu keeps the title, right? I'm sure you could tell stories somewhere in here with those four. Be a great no holds barred match. Intercontinental Championship. This is where things get a little crazy, right? So Dom Mysterio is going to walk into Charlotte, North Carolina. And here's what I'm going to do. Dom Mysterio, whether we like it or not, he is a tried and true babyface, right? Right? He gets reactions, right? There was a pop when he won the championship. No matter how much WWE wants to continue to sort of force the boos of Dominic Mysterio, especially in this story where you can have like Finn turn on him and make Dom, as much as I don't like the sympathetic babyface, make you feel a little bit of sympathy for Dom, that, you know, he has a deadbeat dad and his girlfriend, you know, got hurt and left him, or who knows, maybe she comes back and he finds her with Finn. And they all turn on Dom, which is where they should go with this story, by the way, is that Finn and Liv have been sort of secretly on the side, you know, messing around. And right. And so you get this sympathy for Dom. So he comes out and he's like, hey, I was told I'm having a match. This is an open challenge match. Who's coming out? And being that we are in the Carolinas, we're going to have the Carolinas representing this with Mr. Trick Williams, Trick Willie, the main man. Trick Williams comes out to fight Dominic Mysterio, cause he's your heel. He comes out, tells Dom he doesn't deserve with the position he's at, that his dad is, right. You know, just get under his skin, get the booze, right. I would still have Dom probably win this match. This one is tough to me because I do like Trick, right? But Dominic Mysterio retains the IC Championship. Now we move to the World Heavyweight Championship, which is now held by Gunther and should continue to be held by Gunther. And assuming this event is happening like the next PLE. That was sort of my assumption when I booked the card, right? We're booking the next PLE, whatever we want to call it. I'm in charge, right? And so Gunther needs a champion or an opponent. And the biggest problem right now with Gunther is he doesn't really have opponents. I mean, of course, he's got Goldberg, but he doesn't have a legitimate threat past Goldberg. Okay, he gets past Goldberg. Now what? Well, he also issues an open challenge. I think you can do two open challenges in a night. I think that's fine. And that one gets answered by NXT champion Oba Femi. And just a big slobber knocker of a match where Gunther retains, but it's a struggle. It's a struggle. Gunther retains. It's a struggle. And then the cash-in happens. Seth Rollins cashes in the championship, or the contract, wins the title, and then puts Oba Femi in the faction to finish out the faction. And Oba Femi was the plan, right? And so you have Seth Rollins being protected by Bron Breakker, Oba Femi, and Bronson Reed, which would be an absolute unit of a faction. That's how I would book that. And then your WWE Undisputed Championship match, John Cena would face the hometown hero, Ron Killings, from Charlotte, in Charlotte. And ladies and gentlemen, this has to be your main event. I know I talked about the women's four-way. But Cena versus Ron Killings has to be the main event. And Ron Killings is winning this damn match. Ron Killings will end Cena's title run, right? That's how I 100% would book it that way. 100% would book Ron Killings to beat John Cena for the championship in Charlotte in the main event, give him one final run as champion before he calls it a career, give him a dominant heel run where he's, right, because Ron Killings seemingly is a heel, right? He doesn't care about the fans no more. he doesn't, from what I'm picking up from, right, he's thankful that they spoke up to give him his job back, but he's pissed off, and he's sort of this anti-hero, right? And so he could sort of win the title and have this anti-hero type run for a couple months leading into maybe like into SummerSlam or into Survivor Series, where maybe he drops the title to some younger talent somewhere down the line. That's where we're starting this episode with the booking of what I would call Clash in the Carolinas. WWE, if you're hearing this, let's make that shit happen. That's a beautiful PLE type show that you could run. Next opening thought is on Hulk Hogan. There were reports that he was on his deathbed, and those reports have been reported to be false, fake news, bad information. But that's not what we're really talking about, right? What I want to talk about is the members of the IWC who despise Hulk Hogan so much that they were praying for him to die, right? That's absolutely insane. You don't have to like the man, right? You don't have to like Terry Bollea as a human being. You don't have to like his wrestling career. You don't have to like how he politicked, right? I still think Hulk Hogan is the most influential and important character in the history of the business. Notice what I said, character, because Hulk Hogan is a character. Terry Bollea is the real dude, right? I know he swapped his name legally to Hulk Hogan, or at least try to. I don't think it actually passed. I still think his real birth name is Terry Bollea. You don't have to like Terry Bollea as a person. Now, I'm going to bring up a response to that here in a second. But there's a lot of people I dislike. There's a lot of people who have done things that I don't like. I've never wished for them to die, right? That's absolutely insane. We have some absolutely insane members in the IWC who can't see past their hatred for someone to just have basic human courtesy and to the fact that he is a human being still. And Highlander brought this point up, and it's exactly the way that I thought about this. Yes, Terry Bollea has done some really, really, really bad things, right? You know, whether it's, you know, racism or whatever you have against Terry Bollea. No one's saying he's innocent in anything, right? But Highlander brought this point up in the Discord, and I'm going to second it. If the reports are true and he has found religion and is trying to turn his life around, why should I continue to hold any grudge against this man? If the reports are true, we know he's at least been baptized. He's very open about it. I have concerns about it. If I'm just going to be blatantly honest with you, but with it, I'm not here to judge if he's truly repentant in his religion, right? As someone who also is more on the religious side, like, I'm not here to judge whether he's right. And I also understand that the process of what the Christian religion would call sanctification, that process is a lifelong process, that you just don't, you know, say a prayer and you're magically a new person. It's going to take some time for him to work through some of the things, right? Now, that doesn't mean he says this magic prayer and he's automatically like no consequences for his actions, right? He's still out here fabricating stories, and we have to call him out for that. Absolutely. But it's going to take some time. And because of that, I don't hold any grudge against anything he's ever done in his past. One, because he's never personally offended me. But secondly, like, if he is truly forgiven or truly repentant in his and believing in the religious system he's in, I don't see how we can hold anything against him. It's right now. I am a very hard stance believer in second chances. You know, he's made mistakes. He's kind of owned up for them. If he is truly changed like he claims to be, I think I have to give him that opportunity to prove that to me. And so that's my stance on the whole Hulk Hogan situation. But yeah, y'all in the IWC, if you were wishing him dead and praying that he died, I saw someone tweet, "Tap out, Hogan. Damn it, tap out, Hogan." Sort of like in promo style, like, bro, you're not funny. That's actually pretty sad that you are praying for the death of another human being just because you don't like them, right? Or you don't like their political stance or any of that stuff, right? It's absolutely insane behavior that is being expressed. All right, and then the final, what we would call opening thought of the episode, is on a topic that we have addressed numerous times in this podcast, in the history of this podcast. We've discussed this thing numerous times. And that is on the topic known as tribalism. Right. And so we're going to dive in on this. Right. I've done episodes with James on here talking about tribalism. I've discussed it when Wavy D was on the show. I've discussed it by myself, and my stance, it's going to stand still where I feel I've always been. Right. Wrestling at its core is tribal. Right. Always has been, from the territory days to the Monday Night Wars and now into this sort of AEW, WWE era. Tribalism is the DNA of the business, right? You shouldn't watch pro wrestling as a neutral observer, right? Which is what someone like James or these clowns, these marks in the IWC, who are like, just watch everything and enjoy it. Just be neutral. Don't have an opinion. Gosh. Right. You shouldn't watch wrestling like a neutral observer. You ride with a company. You cheer and support your favorite wrestler, right? No matter what anyone else says, right? Why you guys in the Discord may wonder, Bianca's not on TV. Why are you still cheering for her? Lyra Valkyrie is mid card and she loses, and Becky's legitimately probably better. Why do you cheer so hard for Lyra? Because you cheer for your favorites, right? Even within WWE, there's a tribalism, right? You choose your favorite wrestlers and you ride hard for them, right? Now, with that being said, there's a realism. Like, I will 100%, and Kara's going to get a kick out of this one. She's going to hold this against me. She's probably going to record this and keep this to remind me of that I said this. Realistically, in reality, Becky Lynch is better than Lyra Valkyria. But Lyra's one of my favorites. So I'm a ride or die with her, because that's what happens. That's what makes wrestling fun, is you pick your favorites and you ride or die with them. Right? You chant their names at live, right? That's how it's supposed to be. The roots of the business are tribal, right? Go back to the old territory days. GCW, Georgia Championship Wrestling, Mid-South Wrestling, World Class, the AWA, Jim Crockett, right? People in Memphis weren't watching Vern Gagne. Texas fans didn't care about what was going on in Florida. Every city had their own guys, their own heroes, their own heels. They were local to your local promotions, like it was your hometown football team. That's tribalism. Tribalism creates identity. It made Dusty Rhodes a god in Florida, Jerry Lawler a king in Memphis, and the Von Erichs sacred in Dallas. You don't get that kind of passion without loyalty, and you don't get loyalty without tribes. I'll say it this way. Tribalism is the most innate human behavior, right? You choose tribes because that is, right? you choose your tribe. You hang with your tribe. You ride with your tribe. That is literally the most human, innate, natural thing to do in all of life. But let's move on from the 80s, you know, territory days to the peak of tribalism. Let's fast forward to the 1990s. You remember WCW versus WWF. Wasn't just a ratings battle. It was a culture war. WCW fans were riding for realism. The NWO, cruiserweights, Lex Luger showing up unannounced. WWF fans were backing the Attitude Era, Stone Cold, DX, and blood-soaked rebellion. It split families. It split friendships. And guess what? The best part about it all, it actually worked. Now, I'll have episodes to say that I've done this and I still stand on this. Looking back in reverse, outside of the stars I just mentioned, the Attitude Era was pretty mid in comparison to today's era, in my opinion, right? But back to this, right? Because when you're tribal, you're invested. When you're tribal, a win for your company feels personal. When Mankind won the WWF title, it wasn't just a title change. It was a declaration of war. And WCW gave away that title on Nitro, and the fans changed the channel anyway. Why? Because that was them saying, we pick our tribe, and it's the WWF. It made wrestling matter. But let's talk about talent, because tribalism builds superstars. Think about Roman Reigns versus Kenny Omega. Are they ever going to wrestle each other? Probably not. Does that mean the debate will ever stop? No, because tribalism is what keeps it going. WWE fans will die on a hill for Roman Reigns' storytelling, his psychology, his aura, while AEW fans will preach Kenny's athleticism, in-ring IQ, lack of fashion sense coming out in basketball shorts and a t-shirt. And the fact that he apparently has a big resume in the world of wrestling, right? And guess what? That tension, that's going to create buzz. It keeps names hot. It creates pressure, heat, noise, and all of that equals relevance. Without tribalism, you don't get the heated barbershop debates. You don't get people on YouTube creating content with hour-long breakdowns of match quality. You don't get podcasts like me, James, or Cody, or anybody doing podcasts talking about their favorite product, right? I talk about AEW. James and Cody talk about AEW. That's sort of what makes this whole relationship of the Junkyard Media Group work. Is that all three of us aren't talking about the same thing, right? You don't get forms breaking down, you know, 20-page threads comparing Seth Rollins to Okada, right? You don't get passion without tribalism. Fourth, tribalism drives innovation. Here's the thing. No one wants to admit this. Competition only works when people care about who wins. If this is just let's all be friends, one big kumbaya circle jerk, none of it matters. Why should I watch? Right? If everyone's just enjoying wrestling and there's no brand loyalty, no one's pushed to be better. You think AEW would have started putting more effort into production if WWE fans weren't clowning them online about how bad the production was, and still is, by the way? You think WWE would have stopped phoning it in if AEW didn't start making noise with the CM Punk MJF feud? Nah, iron sharpens iron. But when iron wants to be better, iron sharpens iron, but only when iron wants to be better than the other blade. WWE wants to be better than AEW, and you would hope AEW wants to be better than WWE. But that's what tribalism does. It creates stakes, not just for fans, but for the companies. Tribalism forces promotions to evolve, outdo the other guy, and to win. And when companies try to win, we all win. And fifth, and I already sort of mentioned this, tribalism is human nature. And that's okay. Because let's be real. This isn't just wrestling. This is human behavior. We're wired to find identity in groups, whether it be sports teams, genres of music, your hometown. Why would wrestling be any different? Now, let me be clear. I'm not talking about being toxic. I will 100% agree with James and anyone else that there is a toxic side of the IWC. I'm not talking about being toxic. I'm not saying we need to throw slurs online or disrespect the performers. But there's a huge difference between being passionate and poisonous. You can rep your squad without being a dick. You could be WWE for life and still appreciate what Adam Hangman Page does. You could be all elite and still respect what Gunther brings to the table and in reality, why he is the best wrestler on the planet. But if you try to remove tribalism entirely, you get the current product that we have right now in the wrestling world, where wrestling is stale, safe, and soulless. Like vanilla ice cream in a world that used to have cookies and cream and Rocky Road and peanut butter. So next time someone tells you that tribalism is killing wrestling, just straight up tell them they got it backwards. Tribalism is what keeps it alive. It's what gives it flavor, drama, urgency. It's what makes Roman winning mean something. It's why Jey Uso winning the title at WrestleMania meant something. It's what makes Kenny's V-trigger mean something when he hits it on Okada at All In and wins both titles and becomes the unified champion, right? It's what's going to matter when Darby comes back and beats John Moxley. It's going to have that feel-good moment because it means something. Only when there's tribalism, let the fans pick their side. Let the war rage on, because this isn't tennis. It's pro wrestling. Pro wrestling has always been about the fight, both in the ring and between the fans. So pick your tribe, wave your flag, but just remember, we're all under the same tent. We love the sport, but we need the rivalry. Without it, the whole thing collapses. Let me give an example in the sports world, right? I am a hardcore, without a doubt, will never change unless the team moves cities or does something really, really bad, Patriot fan, right? I'm a New England Patriot fan for life. There is nothing that will change that, again, unless they move cities, right? If for whatever reason Rob Kraft sells the team and the new owner wants to move it to like the middle of nowhere or expand into like Rome or something like that, then maybe we would consider changing teams. But like, you're going to have to like really do something really stupid to get me to not be a Patriots fan, right? I've put like 20 plus years into this as a fan of this, of that team, right? We're not changing for petty stupid shit, right? As a Patriots fan, I absolutely despise the Buffalo Bills. Absolutely despise them. You know what I can say, though? They're better than us. I can 100% recognize the realistic fact that the Bills are probably better than us. They got a better quarterback. They got a better team. As much as the fans hate the critique their coach. I think they have the better coach. Sean McDermott is a really good coach. The Bills are better than us. But as a fan, you think I'm going to walk into the season and be like, oh, the Buffalo Bills are the best. No, the Buffalo Bills suck, dog. That's how tribalism works. I walk into any NFL forum right now and say, we're about to go Drake and Bake, Drake May winning the Super Bowl, right? And the reality will hit, and I'll remember we're not as good as I'm going to hype them up to be, right? But that's tribalism. And you could be tribal while still living in some form of reality. I recognize that there are a lot of teams better than the Patriots. But repping my team, and it, part of it, you know, part of being, a hardcore fan of your team is, you know, no better example than the Dallas Cowboys. Oh, this is our year, bro. Dak may not even be your quarterback, big dog. He better be scared because they brought in Joe Milton, who's a lot cheaper and has a better arm. Dak better perform this year because he might be on the way out. Just saying. Anyway, right? And tribalism is what keeps the sport fun. It's what keeps wrestling fun, is picking your team and repping them, right? I can still acknowledge, and you can ask anyone who's been one of my day ones in the Discord. Has We Too Deep acknowledged that other wrestling companies exist and do great things? Absolutely, right? I've also recognized that WWE has been stale for the last 6 months, but so has the rest of wrestling, right? So let's take a break from the ranch real quick. Let's break down NXT real quick. Just a couple thoughts. First, I'm not a fan of, like, they're really pushing the Evolution pay-per-view for that weekend, and they're pushing Saturday night's main event. But I'm just not a fan that they're not really promoting Great American Bash as hard, right? Especially when you're in a much smaller arena, you're charging an ass and an arm and a leg. You're charging out the ass for them tickets. That's the idiom I was trying to use. You're charging out the ass for them ticket prices, for that center stage arena that you're running. For that small ass set, for you to be charging that much, it's crazy. But just not a fan that they're not building and promoting that anymore. Secondly, Oba needs some challengers. He's got nothing to do. Can we build some legitimate challengers? Like, and not just build one at a time and let him, no, build like a string of challengers. Right, like you're doing in the women's division for JC Jane. Can we do that for the men? This episode of NXT was highly women-centered. And being that NXT has the best women's division in the world, that's always a good thing. It's always a good thing. But here's what my immediate thought coming out of this episode was. Blake Monroe, immediately the best thing on NXT. And it's not because of her looks. Blake Monroe, or IMA, whatever you want to call her, right, is highly attractive. No one's going to say that she's not. But that's not what I judge wrestling for, right? Stephanie Vaquer is attractive, but I like Stephanie Vaquer because she's unique. She has a moveset that I like. She has a move that I like, and it will volunteer a tribute to be put in at any time that she needs to do a devil's. You need to practice a devil's kiss, Stephanie Vaquer. Give me a call. Respond to my email. I'm kidding. That's kind of creepy, but no, for real. That's for real, for real. Lyra, if you want to practice your moves, Lyra. I'm not trained, but you could train me. I'm just saying. Right. But it's not always about, you know, I like Lyra because she's kind of unique, right? And the more people made fun of her for being the weird girl, the more that I started liking her, because that her being the weird girl made her stand out, made her unique, right? Stephanie Vaquer is unique. She has a personality, a charisma, even if it doesn't come out in her promos, because she doesn't speak great English, which is fine. She's one of the few that has the language barrier that has gotten over. And a lot of that, guys, we got to give to Booker T, right? But I just, Blake Monroe is unique. She's special. She's fresh. She's the best thing on the show. With a close second being the next thing is Tony versus Stacks. And I talk about this all the time. This might be the best story in all of pro wrestling. It's drama. It's top level production. And it continues to leave me wondering, why does WWE not ever allow this type of stuff to happen on the main roster? Why can't we have cinematic stuff? COVID taught us that cinematic matches actually work. Why are we not doing them? You know what would make the Wyatt Six feel more important? Is if they weren't like live entities. That everything they did was cinematic. Because the cinematic promos and stuff that they do, when they're not talking in like weird cryptic language, it's pretty entertaining. But, right, if they did cinematic stuff, and that's what the Wyatt Six did, and that was their thing, it would make them unique, fresh, and it would actually hit, in my opinion. If we allowed street fights, right, to happen, where they actually happen on the streets, and you did them cinematically and then had them end up in the ring at the end of the match to end it, right? They would give something unique to the show. I think we need to do more cinematically in pro wrestling. The first company that masters that and actually does cinematics the best, I think we'll have something very unique to their show. All right. So now we're going to move on. That was NXT. Not a lot to talk about. We have a Fatal 4-Way next week to determine JC Jane's next opponent at Evolution. I have an opinion on what's going to happen. I think because Evolution is the same night as Evolution is Sunday. That's right. Evolution is Sunday. Great American Bash is Saturday. I have a feeling that at Great American Bash, Blake Monroe will win the title from JC Jane. And so that's my feeling. Because JC ended the show when Blake was signing her contract and attacked her. So I have a feeling that title will be defended twice. Blake Monroe versus JC Jane, where Blake will win, and then Blake Monroe will show up at Evolution and defend her first title defense against, I'm trying to think of who a babyface they could put in who's in the match right now. I don't actually remember who won, to be honest with you. NXT results. We're going to look this up real quick on the fly. It's Jordynne Grace, Jada Parker, Lash Legend, and Izzy Dame. Boy. Jordynne would be really the only babyface. I mean, it makes sense for Jordynne to be it, though I would really like it to be Miss Parker. Who knows? My prediction for that, if I had to pick one, I'm going to go with Jordynne. I think Jordynne wins that, unfortunately. But yeah, I think that might – I have a very strong feeling that that's going to happen. let's move forward. Let's move on to Deep Five. And the Deep Five this week is going to be highly, highly controversial. The top five, in my opinion, please remember all things that are said on this show are my opinion. The top five most overrated athletes in American sports. And we'll start with two easy ones. We'll start with two easy ones, right? Number one, LeBron James. Now, these aren't in order, but these are how I thought of them, right? LeBron James, right? So, yes, LeBron James is the all-time leading scorer. He has 20-plus seasons of all NBA-level performance and is a four-time champion. Let's back up a second. When I say overrated, overrated doesn't mean trash. Doesn't, like, I'm not calling LeBron James absolute garbage. Overrated just means that the hype, that they're overhyped. Overrated simply means that the athlete itself isn't everything that the hype says they are, right? Doesn't mean bad. It just means not as good as people make them out to be, right? Everyone on this list probably deserves to be, you know, considered a great athlete, but not like, so like, let's talk about LeBron, right? The problem with LeBron is that there's a lot of nuance to his statistics, right? He's 4-6 in NBA finals, including two losses as the favorites to win against Dallas in 2011 and the Spurs in 2014. And he's been has multiple blowouts in the finals, right? He's every title has come with another Hall of Famer on the roster. And with Miami, he had Bosch and Wade. In Cleveland, he had Kyrie and Kevin Love. The Lakers, he had AD, right? And he's never lifted a bad team to a championship in the way that someone like Dirk or Tim Duncan did, right? He's also sort of made the load management era very popular. He's played through an era of inflated scoring, minimal defense, and excessive rest. Michael Jordan played all 82 games in a season 9 times in his career. LeBron has only done it once in 20-plus years. LeBron's stats are more to talk about his longevity than his actual dominance in the game. He's the all-time scoring leader, but he got there through volume and longevity, not dominance. His career field goal percentage is 50.6, which is solid, but his three-point shooting and his free-throw shooting, 34% three-pointers, 73% free throw, are subpar for someone with such usage. LeBron's narrative control and media presence is carefully curated. He's manufactured his legacy, controlling the narratives, blaming teammates, blaming head coaches, blaming GMs, and dodging criticism by weaponizing his philanthropy and social platform to shield his play, basically meaning LeBron James is essentially a manufactured GOAT solely because he has a team around him to protect him from scrutiny. The bottom line is this: LeBron is great, but he's definitely not the GOAT. He's been more protected than any other athlete in history, and his legacy has been inflated by media, selective memory, and a carefully orchestrated career path that includes building super teams to drag him to wins and championships. Number two might be the This might be unfair to call her overrated, but she is, and that is Angel Reese. Yes, she's an NCAA champion. She's an SEC player of the year. She's a top pick in the WNBA draft, and she might be a cultural icon, right? But here's the problem. The hype train left the station before game tape was ever even studied. Sure, at LSU, she was dominant. 23 points per game, 15 rebounds per game in her best season, but she only shot 13% from the three-point line in a game that, especially the women's game, that really hovers, you know, focuses on mid-range to three-point. That's the game in the women's, in women's basketball. Her free throw percentage was somewhere in the 60s, which is not elite for a modern era forward. She's prone to foul trouble and really lapses in defensive rotations, and she really lacks any mid-range to outside scoring game. She's a rebound machine without a doubt, but I have seen her get three, four rebounds back-to-back-to-back, put them back up, and miss the easy layups, right? Her rookie season, she averaged a double-double, but efficiency is still a concern. She shot under 45% from the field, and she struggled with spacing and switching on defense, right? She's very mid as a player, right? The hype is much larger, much better, much more greater than her actual performance. She's made more headlines from her trash talking, NIL, social media, than her actual basketball performance. And before anyone comes on here and says, oh, well, this is because you're saying this because she's African-American. No, because other players like Miss Wilson out in Vegas, I fully respect her game. She's one of the best in college or in pro women's basketball right now is Aja Wilson, right? It has nothing to do with her being African-American. It has everything. When I look at this stuff, it's all about stats and efficiency. You have people like Caitlin Clark. You have people like Aja Wilson. You have players in the league that are producing at a much higher level without all the media obsession, right? Angel Reese is a good player, but she's far from great, and her fame is exceeding her on-court development. She has the potential to be a superstar where the hype is, but at the current moment, she's just not there. Therefore, she is overhyped. Number three on my list, and this might actually be like my actual number one. Now, we're going to go to a sport that many may not even consider a sport, and many who listen to this don't watch or listen to the sport, and that is NASCAR. And number three is Jimmy Johnson. What's Jimmy Johnson's legacy, you ask? Well, he's a seven-time NASCAR Cup Series champion, which is tied for most all time between Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt. Here's the problem. Jimmy Johnson's dominance came during NASCAR's most watered-down era. Five of his seven championships were won under what is known as the Chase for the Cup format, a playoff system NASCAR introduced in 2004, which allowed drivers to win titles without dominating for the full season. He finished sixth or worst in actual accumulated points in three of his title championship years, if we were to do this under the previous points format. So what happened was prior to 2004, let me explain this for those who don't know NASCAR, right? But prior to 2004, the point system was pretty simple. You got your points. Whoever accumulated the most points at the end of the season won the championship. NASCAR wanted to innovate and have somewhat of a playoff system that made the end of the year feel special. And so they created the Chase for the Cup. Now, they changed it from even more different in current NASCAR, where they have like a playoff system, but it's not the Chase. I believe the Chase for the Cup system, I'm actually going to look this up so I can tell you correct information. The Chase. Oh, wait, actually. Okay, they just changed the name. So we're still under the Chase for the Cup system. It's now just known as the NASCAR playoffs. Okay, that makes sense. So essentially, 16 drivers. 16 drivers at the end of the year. Now, this is based on points made the playoffs, right? Now, with NASCAR's current system, if you won a race, if you win a race in the what we call the regular season, which is the first 26 races of the year, if you win a race, you get automatically locked in to the playoffs. And we've never had this happen yet, but if there's more than 16 drivers, the top 16 in points, I believe, would be the ones that are locked in, right? I don't think that's ever happened in NASCAR history. Hopefully it never happens, right? But essentially, it incentivizes winning, which is what they want it to do, but it doesn't really treat the seconds and the thirds and the fourths as, you know, that level of consistency and dominating. So dominating in NASCAR isn't winning all the time, right? Finishing second, you know, in a 36 race season, if you have, you know, 27 top five finishes, that's a dominant season, right? And so this playoff system is what Jimmy Johnson won at. He was very good in clutch moments, and that was what he was known for, right? But in actual points under the old system, he only has four championships, right? More arguments, unlike Dale Earnhardt's rough, intimidating style or Jeff Gordon's flash behind the wheel, Jimmy Johnson lacked identity. And most fans can't really point to a legendary race that defined Jimmy Johnson's career. Another argument, and I really believe this one, is the early 2000s and early 2010s when he was at his peak saw the sport decline in popularity, meaning that Johnson dominated an era where the driver pools and the talent level wasn't as good as the previous era and the current era at the moment. We've also seen that post-2016, Jimmy Johnson has struggled anytime he got in a race car. So the bottom line with this is he's a system driver who knew how to who knew the game and how to format. Right, he's highly skilled, but has no cultural or competitive resonance among the rest of the NASCAR peer base, right? Now we're going to swap over to hockey. Probably the most overrated hockey player of all time, and on my list here is a man that you're going to absolutely laugh, right? Alex Ovechkin. Absolutely overrated. And you're like, how, right? Dude has over 850 goals. He's won a Stanley Cup, and he's one of the best scorers ever. Cool. Absolutely, I will agree with you. He's an all-time great scorer, but he's far from being an all-time great hockey player. And here's my reasons. Ovi rarely played on the penalty kill, and he has a limited defensive value. Advanced metrics like plus-minus show that his team performed worse when he was on the ice against elite competition. Until 2018, Alex Ovechkin's Capitals had nearly a decade of playoff chokes, often losing in the second round, despite being one of the better teams in the regular season. Ovi's scoring longevity is insane, I will admit, but his prime years lacked the two-way dominance of someone of a Sidney Crosby or Jonathan Toews. He was rarely a true MVP-level presence outside of goal totals. And he was very power play dependent, right? Nearly 40% of his career goals came on the power play. You take away the man advantage and his numbers dip significantly. Absolutely. I didn't even realize his goal numbers were 40% power play. I knew he scored on the power play a lot. And if you watch the Capitals play right on the power play, he literally sits in the red circle and doesn't move. The entire Capitals power play since I can remember watching hockey has always been win the faceoff, pass the puck to Ovechkin, and he's going to slap shot it into the net. That's right. There, it's he doesn't play defense, right? He's probably the greatest scorer of the 21st century. But he's overrated because a lot of people put him above Crosby, put him above Gretzky, who I even think Gretzky is a little bit overrated, and that he always had enforcers around him to protect him. That if Crosby had the same level of enforcer and played in the same era of hockey, I think Crosby would be better. I actually think Connor McDavid's better than Wayne Gretzky and will end up being the greatest hockey player of all time when Connor McDavid is retired, if McDavid can ever just win the big one. And there's also guys like Lemieux who are better than Ovi in overall impact. And Ovi's hype simply is just pure recency bias, right? And then my last one, I really just wanted to share the Keith Olbermann clip, but it's too long and I don't really want it to download all that stuff. The last one, the top five most over, the fifth top five most overrated American sports athlete, in my opinion, is Derek Jeter. Again, go find the Keith Olbermann clip. This is just perfect. Explains exactly how I feel. Removing the fact that I am a Red Sox fan and absolutely despise the Yankees, this, I believe, is a very down-the-middle, fair take on Derek Jeter. Sure, five-time World Series champion, over 3,400 hits, and a first ballot Hall of Famer. But let's talk about the problem. Derek Jeter's mythology has outgrown his actual performance. According to Baseball Reference, Derek Jeter had a career defensive run saved of negative 152, which means that he lost 152 runs playing defense, right? That's not just below average. That's historically bad. His five gold gloves were mainly based on reputation and how likable he was. Jeter never led the league. Everyone talks about how good of a hitter he was, right? But he never led the league in any hitting statistic. Not in batting average, not in home runs, not in RBIs, not in on-base percentage, and not in slugging. He was good, but was never dominant. His career wins against replacement is 71.3, which is good. It's not the greatest, especially when you see legends like Honus Wagner, who had a 131, or even Cal Ripken Jr., you have a 95.9, and somehow Derek Jeter's placed above them, right? When you talk about, like, greatest athletes, right? While he did have some iconic moments, giving him the nickname of, like, Mr. November, his postseason OPS was marginally better than his regular season. The bottom line, Jeter was consistent, and he played in the right uniform, which is my number one argument. Derek Jeter's hype comes from being in New York and playing for the Yankees. Had he played in Kansas City, if he played for the San Francisco Giants, if he played for the Texas Rangers, if he played for Atlanta, if he played for Baltimore, if he played for any other smaller market team and not the Yankees, hell, even if he played for the Mets, I don't believe Derek Jeter is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He was a consistently good player, but he was never great in any category. And for that, I truly believe, I mean, this man got a parade. He got his name and number, I think, he had his own Jordan line, I think, at one point. The most overrated player, in my opinion, in baseball history. Was he a decent, like, consistent hitter? Absolutely. No one's going to take that away from him. Again, I'm not saying he's bad. Overrated doesn't mean bad. Overrated just means y'all hype him up too much and you think too highly of him, right? He was a good player, but far from the baseball god that New York fans and the baseball world likes to make Derek Jeter out to be. All right. Now that that's done, let's get in to our final thoughts. Now, this was a topic I thought I was going to be the only one that talked about this, and then James talked about it yesterday. I do have an opinion, and I kind of do agree with James, not for the same reasons, but WWE should really consider pulling Night of Champions out of Saudi Arabia. Again, I'm not trying to get political, but for those who don't know, we are literally on the precipice of war in the region, and I just don't think it's worth the potential risk of getting stuck in the Middle East, risking your talent. And I would have, if I was leading the charge, I would already have made the decision to pull the event from Saudi, and moved it somewhere, probably stateside, until any threat in the Middle East goes away. I just don't think it's worth the risk, considering that within the next 8 to 9 months, WWE will be in Saudi twice. That's just a very dangerous hill to ride on right now. And so I just don't think it's worth any potential risk that you could have. If you want to change it and you still want to call it like Clash at something, well, I just gave you Clash at the Carolinas. You can bring it to Charlotte. Anyway. Second thing that I want to talk about, and it really, really comes down to this, is AEW sickos are really, 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 miserable. They need some help here, guys. They need some help. Sitting here talking about, oh, that's how you do a Mexican show. That's how you do a partnership. Look, most of this, again, this is one of those segments I wrote in response to Junkyard James, and we're going to respond to it, right? I need you to understand. What WWE did with Worlds Collide was introduce well over 1 million fans at this point to the AAA, the main part of the AAA roster, right? I think about 80 to 85% of the AAA roster was on Worlds Collide, and they got an introduction to the biggest fan base in pro wrestling. Close to 700,000-800,000 viewers live watched it on YouTube, right? And so it's absolutely insane to sit here and be like, oh, WWE's trying to colonize, and then you make statements that have zero proof, and then you get upset when we call you a cult, right? You're a cult member, right? You're just spouting off the same nonsense that anyone else in the coldest, like, and if you've ever argued with AEW fans, they all use the same arguments. It's like Tony Khan sends them an email with the talking points for that week. Here's what our talking point is. Here's how we're going to discuss this conversation, right? But the biggest thing to me is they want to talk about WWE's trying to kill everyone they're partnering. They're going to take over TNA. They're going to take over this. They're going to take, guys, your partnership with TNA left them in a worse position than before the partnership. You buried TNA. You buried New Japan. You buried CMLL by putting their women's world champion on a woman in Mercedes Moné who did not need that title. Right, let's talk about your Mexican show, right? Because here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. You ran an entire show. You ran an entire show basically pandering to the Hispanic crowd. You ran zero story. You wasted time. You're on the build to your biggest event of the year, and you waste an entire episode of TV, you know, putting on a glorified indie show. Let's talk about Mercedes, right? Because apparently she's now like being hosted as the greatest women's wrestler of all time. She's now Monet six belts. If you didn't hear that, Mercedes Monet has six championship belts, right? And before you start clapping like the seals on Twitter and calling it iconic or historic or whatever buzzword Tony Khan has trending this week, let's stop right here and let's think. This is absolutely ridiculous. This is straight up clown show behavior, right? How do we get to the point where walking around with more straps than a Spirit Airlines carry-on is considered good or great storytelling? Because let me break this down for you. Four of these belts mean absolutely nothing. Not in AEW, not in wrestling history, not to a mainstream casual fan base, and not even to half of the hardcores. The belt you win in Austria means nothing, right? In the argument of, oh, well that their belt gets to be seen on TV. For what? For the same heart? Or like no one's going to Austria to watch this show. What does putting their belt on TV do for them? Right? Because that's a local indie company that now does not have a champion. But WWE is the one trying to kill business, right? She's carrying titles from indie companies that 90% of the AEW audience probably couldn't name, even if you spotted them the first five letters. Right? But let's be honest. Her being the belt collector, all this is cosplaying with accessories. How many accessories can Tony Khan give his favorite Barbie doll? This isn't just about her. This is really about AEW enabling this nonsense, right? You're giving 15-minute segments or so, hardly even that. The women hardly get any time. But anytime she's on TV, you're giving her time to show off hardware that has nothing to do with your brand. You're running million-dollar TV time to advertise someone else's business. Belts that aren't defended on your show, aren't earned in your locker room, and aren't building your roster. Now, Tony Khan, please explain to me, like I'm five, why is your programming being used to prop up other companies' championships? And the response could be like, well, Trick Williams has the TNA championship. Okay. Absolutely correct. Has it been defended? Sure thing. Will Trick Williams lose the title on NXT? Probably not. But Trick Williams is... You got to understand the situation here, right? You got to understand the situation, right? TNA needs WWE. Trick Williams won that title to sell tickets for Slammiversary, where he will lose the title probably to Santana at Slammiversary. And that built TNA, that actually benefited TNA. No, this indie company in Austria, whose women's champion now, doesn't actually give two holy hells about this promotion, strutting around thinking about herself. They don't benefit with their title just being on the TV. Right, this is absolute this is madness. Do you think Seth Rollins would ever walk out on Raw with the Progress Championship? Do you think Roman Reigns would ever walk out with the House of Glory Championship? Santana might, because he's House of Glory World Champion. But they wouldn't let that happen. They're not going to promote House of Glory. Right? Of course not. Because they understand branding. And this is the point. AEW should be promoting AEW. Not promoting CMLL. Right? Not promoting this, that, and the third indie company across the world. But AEW. Understand branding. AEW's like, nah. We just want you to look like Thanos with that Infinity Gauntlet. Let's go ahead and live your dream, queen. And this is where it really ticks me off, right? When everyone is a champion, no one is. Right? How am I supposed to take the TBS title seriously if the TBS champion has to wear five other belts to get a pop? You're telling me Willow or Sky or Chris Statlander is going to beat Mercedes Moné and only get one of the six belts? So you're promoting six title reigns and you're only going to get one payoff. Huh. Doesn't make sense to me. That's not drama. That's dilution. Championships are supposed to mean something. They're not supposed to be collected like Funko Pops at a Comic-Con table. Oh, I'll have this one and I'll have this one and I'll have this one. And look, I get it. Mercedes Moné is pretty good. I'm not going to even take away from her. Her in-ring ability might be the best. I don't even want to say the best right now. Maybe in the of the four horsewomen. Maybe you have an argument to say she's the best in-ring performer of the four horsewomen. In-ring only, is what we're, right? She's cool. She is money. I'll give it to her. Right? But this whole like belt collector thing, it's a clutch. Crutch, excuse me, I can't speak. It's a crutch. It's lazy and it's self-indulgent. You want to build a legacy, do it by elevating the women around you. Why is Becky Lynch so respected in the business? Because she elevates the women around her. She elevates Lyra Valkyria, right? She elevates that entire NXT. When Becky Lynch won the NXT Women's Championship, it was to elevate Tiffany. It was to elevate Lyra. It was to elevate that entire locker room. Put over up-and-coming talent. You could have dropped the TBS title to Athena or Billy Starks. Could you now have Mercedes? But no, the story isn't centered. The story has to be centered around Mercedes because she's probably going to get number seven at All In when she beats Toni Storm. Holding six titles from six different companies isn't dominance. It's distraction. It screams, look at me, not, well, let's build this women's division. And this is where Tony Khan needs to step in, become big balls Tony, and say enough. This is AEW. This is All Elite Wrestling, not all ego wrestling, not all championship belts to Mercedes wrestling. Mercedes is a special attraction. She can go. She can talk. She has some charisma. But she's muddying the waters. AEW has a very decent women's division right now. And it could be even better if it had structure and focus. But instead, they're running segments for title belts from three time zones away and treating them like they mean more than their own championships. Mercedes Moné walking around with six belts is not impressive. It's not iconic. It's not boss CEO behavior. It's brand confusion. It's vanity over value. And it's killing her credibility and the credibility of the AEW women's division. One belt, one spotlight, one story. That's what matters. But right now, she's turning the division into a trophy room, and she's the only one with the keys. Wake up, drop the belts, build the stories, or we'll all be watching something that is not All Elite Wrestling. And that, my friends, is this episode of the Slapping Me Wrestling Podcast. Let me know what you guys think. If you haven't yet, like, share, subscribe, leave a thumbs up, leave a rating if you're listening on audio. And until the next time, I'm Way Too Deep, and I will see you on Tuesday.
So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEWWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay. Slapping meat wrestling every Tuesday.